Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello there, welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. How are you? Thanks for being here. Welcome along. It's good to have you here as we go into a North London derby. Almost feels like I should do it a little bit like this as we go into a... North London derby. Sorry, I meant North London Derby. Well, we do have a North London Derby coming up this Sunday. We travel to, where is it? White Hart Lane to play, what are they called again? Tottenham. That's right. A game that could have some serious implications for Tottenham's title challenge. And also where we might finish, because, of course, if we are to have any chance of getting into the top four and into the Champions League next season... Then we're going to have to win pretty much the remainder of our Premier League games. We did the one in midweek, of course, against Crystal Palace, but we'll talk about that in a while. And you know what, though? I was thinking about this. What happens if we don't finish in the top four? And you say, well, you know, so what? We don't get Champions League football. What's the difference? We only get knocked out in the round of 16 anyway. I can live without that. Maybe the Europa League would be something different, something fun, something exciting. And I see that point of view. I absolutely see that point of view. The problem I have with this is not so much about the football or whether we're playing FC Vlisniv from Yugoslavia. I don't care about that. You know, I'm not, you know, too proud to say that we're playing FC Vlisniv from Yugoslavia, wherever they are. I don't, you know, it doesn't make any difference to me. But as we know, the Europa League games take place on a Thursday. And I'm looking at this through the prism of my own work. Maybe I'm being selfish. But if these games are taking place on a Thursday, what am I going to do about the podcast for a Friday morning podcast? It's always been that way. Since the Arsecast launched in 2006, it was always on a Friday morning. People expect the Arsecast on a Friday morning. What am I supposed to do? I mean, you could say stay up really late. You indolent slacker, you lazy bastard. Just stay up late and do a podcast and make sure it's there for us on Friday morning or else. But that's fine. That is fine. You know, I get that. I can see how you might want me to do that. The issue I might have is, who do I talk to? Can't very well email someone and say, hey, would you like to appear on the podcast this week? That's great. Yeah, if you wouldn't mind, I'm going to give you a Skype call at 2 a.m., so we can talk about the game that was on a Thursday night and we can preview whatever game is coming up at the weekend on Sunday. We're going to have a lot of Sunday football if we finish in the Europa League places. So this, for me, is the struggle from a professional, from a podcasting point of view. It's not the only reason I want Arsenal to finish in the top four. No, seriously, honestly, it's not. I want the team to finish as high as it can up the table for the sake of the team and for the fact that, you know, we might be able to attract better players in the transfer market. Just leaving a little space there for you to laugh out loud. I think that's what they say. But, you know, to be able to keep players like Mesut Ozil and Alexis Sanchez, it's a bit of a sticky one. So... I don't quite know what to do in that regard. I suppose we'll just have to cross that bridge as and when we come to that particular bridge. We can't not play in the Europa League if that's where we finish. I think in some ways are we almost guaranteed a Europa League place? How many teams go into the Europa League? Is it three or two or what? I don't know. Let me look this up. How many English teams... go into Europa League. How many teams go into Europa League? Come on. What the fuck? Wikipedia says that the minimum quota is 4 English clubs to qualify for the Champions League and 3 for the Euro. Oh, 3. So even if we finish 7th, we're going to get Europa League football next season. It's going to be tricky. This is going to be a tricky situation. It's going to require all my brain power to figure it out. But look, we'll cross that bridge, as I said, when we come to it. It has been a good week. We're in the FA Cup final. We beat Manchester City 2-1 at Wembley. It was good. It was exciting. It was refreshing. It was reinvigorating. It was just nice to win a big game against big opposition coming from behind, as we did, going a goal down to Sergio Aguero, then getting one back through Nacho Monreal and Alexis Sanchez ultimately scoring the winner. And I think that has lifted the mood a little bit, as it should. A Wembley final. Well, I mean, I'd rather a final anywhere but Wembley because it's so terrible, but it is what it is. It's the chance of a trophy this season, and you can't really turn your nose up at that. And then in midweek, we played Leicester. Leicester. Pfft, I don't like Leicester. Not saying that they're the worst team in the world or they're the worst bastards in the world. Clearly, that's not the case. There are other teams and other players and other managers who are far more dislikable than they are. But I don't like them. Every time we play them, I find myself going, oh, I don't like you. I don't like you, Leicester. Or your players or any of you. I don't like it. Sort of seething silently to myself. And it was a bit like that the other night. Champions, the Premier League champions, coming to the Emirates after we played 120 minutes at Wembley, and they didn't even play a game. They didn't have a Premier League game. They haven't played a Premier League game since the 15th of April, followed by a Champions League game against Atletico Madrid, right, on the 18th of April. So they've had a load of rest. They were going to lose that game anyway. And all they did was defend. They parked their Leicester-shaped bus, and they defended and defended and tried to catch us on the break, and that didn't work. And then, of course, we got the very late goal through Nacho Monreal's shot, which deflected off the right bosom of Robert Huth into the bottom corner of the net. Kasper Schmeichel left stranded. And then there was that whole throw-in incident thing, which a lot of people have criticized Alexis Sanchez for. And look, I get the diving thing and rolling around. Look, nobody really likes to see that. You want to see players act a little more professionally, with a little more decorum. But, you know, in this instance, I'm pretty much on his side. What he was trying to do was to absolutely distract Leicester from the opportunity they had to fling a long throw into our box. He was trying to put them off. He was trying to just wind them up a little bit. And it worked. If he had to behave like a bit of an idiot to do that, so be it. That's taking one for the team, people. Taking one for the team. Yeah, I had to roll around and go, oh, I know I haven't really been hitting the face by the ball, but I'll roll here. It'll wind them up. They'll lose their focus. They won't be quite as switched on, and maybe that will be good for us. It'll help us defend this set piece, something which has been our undoing. So I'm on board with Alexis Sanchez in that regard. Like, if he did it against Tottenham on Sunday, if we're 2-0 up and they have a free kick and he does something similar, man, I'm gonna invent my own nation, and then I'm gonna knight him. He can be a knight of the nation of Andrewland, whatever it is, Ars Blogania. I don't know, but I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it because I don't like Leicester. And I tell you what else I didn't like was the guy called Benaloon. I didn't like that one bit. And I've noticed a growing trend this season. I don't know if you've noticed this too, but players who almost sound like Arsenal players or ex-Arsenal players. Because every time I heard Benaloon, I was thinking, Benayoun, Yossi Benayoun, who spent a season with us on loan from Chelsea. Yossi Benayoun, Benaloon, Benayoun. And then I remembered we played Hull City and there's a guy called Grzycki. You're going, hang on a minute. You just put a G in front of Grzycki and you think that gives you the right to run around our pitch with impunity? No, sir, it does not. And in the same game, they had a player called Klukas. Klukas. Lucas, Klukas, Lucas, Klukas, Klukas. You see, if you do it all together, it just loses all meaning. It sounds like the same name. Lucas, Klukas, Lucas, Klukas. That's difficult. But anyway, you know what I'm saying? This is not good. I don't like it. They're co-opting the names of our players. Like if Stoke sign a player called Tom Blergkamp, I'm going to go fucking mad. I promise you. It just will not wash. This should not be allowed. You're just waiting for them to announce on Sky Sports News when the transfer window opens this summer. Oh, West Ham have signed Kim Skalstrom from somewhere. I don't know where he plays at this moment in time, but all these players are going to rock up in the Premier League whose names sound quite like Arsenal player names. It's not right. I don't approve, and I demand that something be done about it. I don't know what, exactly. Maybe we could make these players change their names. Or pronounce them differently, so Sam Clucas would not be able to call himself Sam Clucas. He would have to, I don't know, Frenchify his name, so he becomes Sam Clucas. And the Benaloon guy could be Benaloone or something, or Benaloon. I don't know. Just, you know, do the vowels differently, just so it doesn't annoy me as much. Maybe it's just me, but I'm quite precious about small things that make no difference to anything. That's just who I am. Sorry. But look, enough of that. Oh, I should tell you as well, a bit later on in the show, I'm going to give you a chance to win a competition. A competition which is a copy of Mesut Ozil's new book. It's called Gunning for Greatness, My Life. I'll give you details of that a little bit later on. But now, let's look back at the week that was from an Arsenal perspective. Joining me, a man who writes for the Islington Gazette, the most local of Arsenal newspapers. It's Laith Youssef. Hi there.
Hi, Andrew. How are you doing?
I'm well, thanks. Let's start with what happened on Wednesday night against Crystal Palace. Having come off something of a high, I guess, from Wembley on Sunday, Arsenal beating Manchester City 2-1 to reach the FA Cup final. It was bread and butter stuff, and it wasn't Crystal Palace at all. It was Leicester City, of course. We lost to Crystal Palace a couple of weeks ago, so we don't need to be reminded of that. But it was a fairly laboured evening. I think Arsenal looked like a team who'd played 120 minutes, and Leicester were a team that didn't look like they wanted to cross the halfway line for most of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a very scrappy game. It was a really flat atmosphere, considering we'd sort of qualified for Wembley. There were a lot of empty seats at the start of the game, and a lot of empty seats during and at the end of the game as well. Leicester, you know, Shakespeare's done really well there, taking over from Ranieri, and no one can begrudge him that, but they didn't come to play. They weren't the Leicester of last season, everyone knows that. They defended well, and good luck to them, and it was down to Arsenal to break them down, and they did, finally. It was they had a bit of luck, but it was good to see the goal go in, because 6 points behind Man City in fourth place, that, you know, there is still that chance Arsenal can finish in the top four. So, yeah, but it was one of those games you file the match report when you go home and you forget about it. And if you're a fan, you forget about the game straight away or go down the pub and talk about something else, basically. It was one of those games.
Yeah, it's not one that's going to live long in the annals of Arsenal's history, to be fair. But the goal coming as it did, an own goal deflecting in off Robert Huth, and when you look back at what happened at Wembley as well, the disallowed goal in the first half for Manchester City, you know, you watch these games and you watch a struggle at times, and there's been moments in this season where you think maybe just a little bit of luck might have changed our trajectory a little bit sooner. So it's nice to see that, we're getting a little bit of good fortune rather than everything going the wrong way.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And touching on the semi-final again, I think they did have a lot of luck with ref Craig Pawson and disallowing that goal after Sané's cross, basically. Arsenal, we don't seem to get on the end of those sort of decisions sometimes. And I think it was a real pivotal moment in the game. And obviously Arsenal capitalised on it eventually. Again, talking about Wembley and talking about last night, it was interesting. It was Nacho Monreal who fired the ball in with Giroud jostling Huth. Mm. And obviously the ball coming off Huth into the net. Monreal has been a revelation in that role, just as Oxlade-Chamberlain has. I wrote a piece in my Arsenal column in this week's Gazette about Oxlade-Chamberlain, because if you remember, I think it was about 3 years ago when Arsenal played Palace at Arsenal. It was 2-0. It was a Sunday game. It's instantly forgettable, apart from Oxlade-Chamberlain's performance. He was playing centre midfield, and he was Brian Robson-esque, for want of a lack of an Arsenal reference there. He was absolutely fantastic. And I made a point in my column, basically saying, have we been playing him in the wrong place? Because he never really kicked on in centre mid. He tries his best. I've interviewed him a couple of times over the years, and he's a very, very... He's a lovely bloke. He loves his football. He works hard. He's one of the lads. But you just felt there was something there in terms of a lack of confidence. It was almost like he didn't believe how good he could be. Mm. And I think this wing back role is absolutely perfect for him. He's got the pace, he's got the energy, he's got the power. His attacking instincts are great. If you ally that with a bit of defensive nous as well, which hopefully will come, I think he could be a perfect wing back. And it was very interesting that we obviously played three at the back again last night, or admittedly going to four when Gibbs came off. And I thought Nacho Monreal played really well last night. And it was very interesting that he had the shot that led to the goal as well.
He's a very versatile player, Monreal, of course, because he's played left back, he's played left wing back, and then he slotted in one of the centre half roles last night.
I know that he's one of those players you only notice if he doesn't play well. As a left back. He's quite consistent, but when he has a bad game, he really does have a bad game. So I think this wing-back role could free him up if it's a long-term option. Although, obviously, we never know with Arsene Wenger.
True. I mean, but mentioning Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain as well, I think it's interesting that you mentioned lack of confidence. It's something Arsene Wenger has spoken about before with Oxlade-Chamberlain, where he says he has a tremendous amount of self-doubt, that he doesn't quite have the confidence in himself that he should have. But even so, having seen him perform well in this wing-back role on the right-hand side, and I'd agree with you that from the little we've seen of it so far, it's not a huge amount, not a big sample size, you'd have to say, but it does look like it suits him and his qualities. But even so, Arsene Wenger is saying to him, he said during the week he's going to end up as a central midfield player. This spell on the right will help him be a central midfield player. And you do wonder, like, if sooner or later he's going to have to bite the bullet with Oxlade-Chamberlain and say, look, if you are going to be a central midfield player, this is the only place I'm going to play you from now on, and you're going to have to fight for a place in that position. In some ways, his versatility is working against him.
Yeah, absolutely. Jack of all trades, master of none. You're absolutely right. It's not the first time Wenger's tried to knock round pegs into square holes and vice versa, and sometimes it's come off, sometimes it hasn't. Wenger does seem to have an obsession with playing Chamberlain in the middle, or wanting him to be in that position long term. As I say, that Palace game, he was fantastic. He was driving forward. He was winning tackles. He was playing the ball forward. He was absolutely wonderful. And you thought, wow, if he can kick on and do that week in, week out, we've got a world-class player, and not just an international class or a long-term prospect at Arsenal. But it never really happened. And you do wonder whether Arsenal's system does suit him if he's going to play central mid. But I thought he was a revelation at right wing back on Sunday. He was absolutely fantastic. And it showed his spirit as well, because he went off. I think he was hobbling and he went off on crutches. He left Wembley on crutches, and he was on the bench last night. And that shows his spirit as well. And we knock Arsenal when they deserve to be knocked, basically, as do the fans. As does everyone, really. And when they show a lack of character, as they did at Palace, like you say, a couple of weeks ago, they deservedly, they attract a lot of criticism, and deservedly so. But when they show character like they did on Sunday, it was absolutely fantastic. And even again last night, digging deep to get that win. Wenger said afterwards, and I was at the press conference afterwards as well, and he said we needed to win. We needed to take the gamble. 0-0 was no good for them. And they did it. And that's got echoes of Arsenal's great teams in the past. No one's saying this is potentially a great team at the moment, but it's just nice to see a bit of spirit again. Mm. It really was.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's been in short supply over the last few weeks. And to be reminded that there is some quality and a bit of balls left in the team is no bad thing. I think it's given everybody a lift at a time when things were feeling really quite disenchanting or disenfranchising. What's the word I'm looking for? Just disappointing, even. It's been difficult. But you mentioned the empty seats, and that was something that was very obvious. A couple of people on Twitter mentioned to me that there were some transport issues in and around Arsenal. I think there was an issue with Highbury and Islington, but from the club announcement,
it's an issue with Highbury and Islington.
Yeah, but they said that this is something that would affect people more after the game than before the game. And I think one of the things that we've touched on the podcast and on the blog over the last number of weeks is that for all the protests, for banners, for people who complain on social media and everything else, when it gets to the point where people aren't turning up to the stadium, that is really the most effective form of protest, that people feel like there's not much left to them to get their point across other than to not go, or they're either so not interested in what's left of this season that they're not willing to go. You'd like to think that those empty seats weren't just noticed by people on Twitter and noticed by TV cameras, but noticed from the people who were sitting in the director's box last night and paying close attention to that.
Yeah, you make some really good points there. What I think it's a bit of as well, it's not... Obviously, there have been protests outside, and there is a movement to try and get people to boycott games or turn up early, or turn up into the game, or leave early. Mm. But I really think it's got a lot to do with apathy as well. I think people are just... A lot of people, despite the last couple of weeks, are just really, really down on Wenger at the moment. And I think a lot of old-school fans... potentially people I've talked to, I mean, I've been watching Arsenal 30 years and I know a lot of friends who have been, and we still do, and there's a lot of people saying they're not going to renew if Arsene Wenger is given that 2-year contract or even signs for the extra year. In terms of making the sort of hierarchy sit up and look at it, those tickets are already sold. They've got the money for it, they've got the revenue for it. Admittedly, you could argue that the people who aren't turning up are not spending any money at the club on the particular night, but that's minuscule compared to the fact that the tickets have already been sold. There's a massive waiting list there as well, and I think it really does. I mean, this is just from my point of view. I think the club really doesn't mind who has those tickets so long as they sell them, basically.
Yeah, I mean,
which is dangerous in a way, because you're obviously losing a massive section of old school fans. And people have supported him through thick and thin.
Of course.
Basically. And I know a lot of people have had enough. And it's a real shame because, obviously, it's great that Arsenal got to Wembley and the win last night puts a challenge back in for the back four. But I still can't forget the Palace result and more importantly, the Palace performance.
Yeah.
It was just desperately disappointing. You never want to see an Arsenal team lose, but you never want to see an Arsenal team lose with a lack of character.
Yeah.
And that brought back the dog days of Don Howe, basically, for me. That was arguably one of the worst performances I've seen in 30 years at Arsenal. And we've seen a few. I mean, it was Wrexham away, Walsall at home in the League Cup in 83-84, and various other ones, Bradford away. We want some fight, and we want a team that is going to challenge for the league, basically. We watched last for the ages. No one's got a divine right to win a trophy. No one's got a divine right to even challenge for a trophy. What you want to see is progress. And I think if we were still at Highbury, people would be a little bit more patient. But we were sold a dream. Moving from Highbury was going to elevate Arsenal to the next level of world domination, as it were. And it just hasn't happened in terms of a challenge for the league title. You could argue maybe 2008, it carried on until the defeats at Old Trafford in sort of late April, but there's not been a consistent league title challenge since they moved, basically.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are really frustrated about that, and that reflects in terms of frustration with Wenger as well.
Yeah,
I mean, that's just one strand, obviously.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
that's what I think about that.
I know it's only anecdotal, and I can only go from what a couple of emails that I've received, but some people who were much lower down on the waiting list than they thought they were have been contacted by the club to say that there's the possibility, and I'm sure you've heard this from people as well, that the people who were like way down in the tens of thousands who are supposedly ahead of them are being contacted to say there's the possibility that they might get a ticket. And I think the other thing that we have to take into account is whether those tickets are sold or not this season is maybe it's a moot point because the money's in the bank and everything else. When it comes to people renewing, and when it comes to things that are really important for the club, as much as I feel there's perhaps a little too much business focus from a fan's point of view, we know so much about sponsorship and marketing and kit deals and sponsorship deals and everything else. But the reality is when you look at how much money football clubs turn over, where they get their money from, is more and more based on the commercial side of the game. You cannot go to a blue chip sponsor or try and sell Arsenal as a blue chip sponsorship investment to a company who are looking at a stadium that's got thousands and thousands of empty seats. They don't want to be associated with that. They, or, you know, so what happens is you either miss out on the really good sponsors or you're selling yourself short to other sponsors who are taking advantage of the fact that you're not in, in some ways desperate for the money, but you, you're left with little option because there are just so many empty seats in your stadium.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And brands... brands market themselves as being aspirational, and if you're associating yourself with a football club that's got, you know, 10,000 empty seats, that's not something that you'd want your brand to be associated with. So you could argue, if there is a concerted fans boycott, that could make the powers that be sit up and look at it in terms of, you know, there are empty seats. And I remember Liverpool, was it Sunderland a couple of years ago at Anfield? They were really, really concerted and united in their protest. And they all walked out 13 minutes ago. And ironically, I think it actually had an effect on the game as well. I think Sunderland equalised to make it 2-2, Jermaine Defoe, when half the cop was empty because they were really frustrated with what was going on there. And if there was something similar at Arsenal, I think that would make a difference. But obviously Liverpool as a city is a very united, it's a community-based city. London's so disparate. You've got fans coming from all the home counties as well and elsewhere too. I don't think you'd ever have that sense of community and sense of unity that would allow a boycott where everyone leaves with, say, 13 minutes to go or what have you. So I don't think that would happen. I think apathy is the main...
I agree.
I totally agree.
But look, hopefully what's happened over the last week or so, the fact that there's a cup final on the horizon will re-energize people a little. And whether we think it's doable or not, there is, of course, the prospect of a top four finish. I think it's going to be really, really difficult. And it's going to be very difficult to get the win that we require in a North London derby. Now, if you look at the overall season, Tottenham clearly have had their best season in many, many years. It looks like they're going to finish ahead of Arsenal for the first time in Arsene Wenger's reign. I think that's 21 years. And look, law of averages suggested it was going to happen sooner or later. And I'm, you know, not overly invested in that side of things. You know, I don't feel like our big failure this season is finishing behind Tottenham. It's just not challenging for the title again. That's the bigger picture. But whatever way they've played this season and however strong they've been, when it comes to the derby, it's a little bit special, and Arsenal have a chance to put a real dent in their title hopes. That shouldn't be our ambition. Our ambition, of course, should be to win the game and take the 3 points because we need them. But from a fan's point of view, it would really help, I think, you know, keep mending those fences that they've worked on the last couple of weeks.
I was trying to separate. I'm obviously a full-time journalist, and I cover Arsenal from the press box. And I'll be there on Sunday for the Islington Gazette and various other newspapers as well. And if you're talking about Tottenham, you're absolutely right. It's the best Tottenham side that I can remember since the mid-80s. And they're almost more consistent than that Flair side of the mid-80s as well. They've got a real team ethic there. They work really hard. They've got a forward who can play well, with four goals. They've got a defence that's really tight. They're big lads as well. They're powerful. They've got a young, dynamic manager. It's... you know, it's going to be tough for Arsenal. That's from a journalist's point of view. And obviously, when you're in the box, you're completely neutral, and I'll be reporting it, like I say. From someone with my Arsenal fans hat on, someone who's watched the games for 30 years, I've been to probably more than 75 Arsenal Spurs games home and away, and this is a real test for Arsenal. This is, you know, they show character at Man City on Sunday, but will they show it when they really need to at Spurs? Mm. It's, you know, we've seen some great Arsenal teams down at White Hart Lane under Tony Adams and various other players as well. And, you know, I was in 2004 when Arsenal won the league there again, and there was some great teams there. You just fear a little bit for Sunday. Obviously, you know, Arsenal, if they do play as well as they did against Man City and ride their luck and show character, they may have a chance. But, yeah, it's going to be really, really tough. And like you say, I mean, obviously from a Spurs point of view, they will be pleased that if they do win, they will finish above Arsenal, whatever happens from now on, from now on in. But from an Arsenal point of view, I don't think that matters that much. And from a Spurs point of view, I think they'll still think they've got a chance of actually winning the league. Certainly, if they beat Arsenal on Sunday, I think the gap will be 1 point before Chelsea play again. So it's game on, really. I'm so looking forward to it as a journalist and a fan. I love the atmosphere down there. People go, it's really aggressive and intimidating, and it is. And that's the whole point. That's what you want from a derby. Obviously, no one would ever condone violence and anything like that. And, you know, from a fan's point of view, it is a bit hairy outside afterwards.
Yeah, it's easier when you've got your journalist hat on. You can just slink out.
Yes. Yeah, that's one of the bonuses, actually, on Sunday. I'm not looking forward to I know my friends aren't looking forward to walking outside afterwards, but that's a completely different story. But yeah, it's just going to be a cracking game. I'm so looking forward to it, as is everyone else, I think. And if you don't, then you've got a question why. No, it's a North London derby. It's the end of the season. It's going to be rocking. Arsenal could have a chance to inflict Spurs' last ever loss at White Hart Lane, or the old White Hart Lane.
Yeah.
The White Hart Lane as we know it. So that's another thing as well, another strand to it. So yeah, I can't wait. I'm absolutely looking forward to it.
Mm.
For me, my favourite ever Arsenal game was 4th of March 1987. I was a kid and I went to the Littlewoods Cup semi-final replay. I went to all three semi-finals, but I went to that game. And that, for me, was my favourite of the game. That, for me, beats Anfield. It's just a personal thing. And obviously, Anfield was massive. And I've been to every other sort of, you know, triumph and every other game, practically home and away, over the last 30 years. But for me, that game started George Graham's teams, basically.
That was
a kickstart to everything. That was a catalyst for Anfield 89. And,
sure.
And you could almost see the strand that goes through to today, basically, from that game, I think.
But, was that the one where they were announcing the tickets?
Yeah, because it's funny, because I've got a lot of Spurs fans, friends as well, and they say it never happened when the PA came in at half time and said, you know, this is how you get your tickets. It did happen, because I was there and I heard it, along with 12,000 other Arsenal fans, and we went crazy. We went absolutely crazy. That was almost the rallying point. That was, I think we were 1-0 down at half time. You know, Charlie Nicholas had gone off, or was just about to, really under the sun, and that was a real rallying cry, a clarion call to Arsenal on and off the pitch, and for Spurs fans to say it didn't happen, well, it did, because I was there and I heard it, basically. So yeah, happy memories. But you know, there's a lot of memories over the years. I mean, for me, probably one of the worst ones was that 5-1 League Cup defeat. I remember a 5-0 in 82-83 as well. George Wood was in goal. There's been so many sort of good and bad memories over the years, and you just hope Arsenal can make memories for the right reasons on Sunday.
Absolutely.
I hope so, anyway.
Yeah, well, let's hope so. I mean, it is the final game of this White Hart Lane, and having won the league there in the past, it would be quite the thing to win the final game there, put a real nail in their title chances, and keep our own top four chances alive. But look, we'll hope for a good result. Good luck covering the game, slinking out of White Hart Lane with your little journalist hat on. Great to talk to you, Leith. Thanks a million.
Cheers, Andrew. Take care. All the best.
Thank you very much indeed to Leith. You can find him on Twitter at Leithy29. That's at Leithy29, Laythy29. And he's also the author of a very cool book called The Miracle of Copenhagen, about Arsenal winning the Cup Winners' Cup, you'll remember, in 1994. That amazing Alan Smith goal against that really rather good Parma side, which had Asprilla, Gianfranco Zola, Thomas Brolin, before he became the world's largest man. And so it's a good book. You can check it out, I think, on Amazon. So search for The Miracle of Copenhagen and check that out if you haven't already. Right, we're going to take a short break. We're back with the competition and more after this.
No, no. No. No, no. No, 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 no.
Look at...
No, no, no. No, 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 no. No.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Right then, time for a bit of a competition. And what I've got for you this week is a copy of Mesut Ozil's book, just released. It's called Gunning for Greatness, My Life by Mesut Ozil. Now, the publisher sent me this book, and I looked at it, and I thought to myself, do I want to read it? Do I want to read this book? Nice picture of Mesut Ozil on the back. Picture of Mesut Ozil on the front. Looking very clean cut. Just got his hair all done. Mesut Ozil. Gunning for Greatness. My Life. Little thing in the top corner here. With a foreword by Jose Mourinho. Still, you know, it's a book by Mesut Ozil. And I thought about it and I said, no, I don't. I don't really want to read it because I'm not sure that footballers should be doing biographies while they're still playing. And if they are doing a biography while they're still playing, it is probably, you know, not full of the good stuff that you need. Because you can't say stuff about people, A, that you're still playing with, or B, that you might come up against in another game. Because, you know, it's just not the done thing. You know, you keep things quiet, the sanctity, the omerta of the dressing room and all that kind of stuff. So my feeling was it's not a book I'm particularly interested in. So what better thing for me to do than to give it to one of you guys? Because I'm sure somebody out there would like to read it. And if you are one of them, all you've got to do is send me an email to competition@arsblog.com. That's competition@arsblog.com. And tell me, from which club did Real Madrid sign Mesut Ozil? Because we obviously signed him from Real Madrid. But what German club did Real Madrid sign Mesut Ozil from? competition@arsblog.com. And you could win yourself a copy of this book with a foreword by Jose Mourinho. I wonder what his foreword says. I haven't read any of it. I wonder, is it actually about Mesut Ozil, or would it perhaps be about Jose Mourinho? First word, I'm. Then I found a wonderful player. I put him top of my goal. When I moved to Madrid, I realized that I was missing someone. I decided to sign him. I have many things to be pleased about. I have been able to give him everything as a coach. Yeah, there you go. Jose Mourinho. Sort of man who would turn up at his best friend's funeral and talk about himself. But that's something we all know, I guess. Now, as I said, we do have a North London derby on Sunday, so why not a bit of perspective from the other side of this particular game? I can't say I'm delighted to have him on, but it's a welcome back to the show for Harry Hotspur. Hello there.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you doing, I think, is the question here, because I guess you're suffering from probably vertigo and a nosebleed from being above us for the first time in God knows how long.
Yeah, listen, this is probably not what you want to hear, but no, I'm delighted. I am personally where a lot of your fans are now in terms of that I've already got there. I want to win stuff.
Yeah.
And the Wembley thing, the Chelsea thing, the rest of it, I'm happy with second, but I'm not cartwheeling. The other problem some of your listeners may have with me is that I don't actually wake up every morning and hate Arsenal. I don't mean to be snide when I say I don't really think of you at all. I have an irrational contempt. It's definitely for West Ham. So that, you know, probably I'm a little bit fixated, a bit tribal with that. But yeah, the St. Totteringham Day is supposedly coming up, and do you know something? It never really made me blush or feel sad, and I won't be letting off fireworks on, sure. on Sunday either. Sure. But yeah, it's great. It's fantastic. It's despite us. Mm. But I really want to win something.
Well, yeah, that's the next step, isn't it? I mean, what did you make of last weekend against Chelsea in the FA Cup semi-final? Because, you know, obviously you played really well, but still somehow managed to concede four goals. And, you know, as somebody who is very well aware of how Arsenal can be, that was pretty Spursy, if you like.
Yeah, I wouldn't say take exception, but I'd kind of disagree that we played well. We had a lot of pointless possession.
Oh, I know that one, yeah.
And I'm not a stat head, but I do resort to them as a comfort blanket when people are telling me something I don't like hearing. Mm. So I was getting Spurs fans telling me that was disgraceful, we should have won that, we was robbed, and all the other cliches. And there was somewhere in the region of, let's say, to round it up, 500 passes that Spurs had against Chelsea's 250. But of Spurs' 500 passes, 432 and a half of them were short passes.
Yeah.
Now, we're not a Serie A side, so we're a Premier League side. So using my algebra, that says there were lots of like little panic passes. You know, hot potato, oh, fuck, you take it. Oh, Christ, you know, I've got three men on me. And we needed, by the time the game had finished, we needed to have scored three more goals in order to win.
Yeah.
That, to me, is getting thumped. I won't bore your lot by going into a proper sort of autopsy, but we bizarrely played a player who's an attacking forward as a wing back. And it was Poch tinkered around. I don't understand why. I went into that game thinking that we could probably beat Chelsea.
Yeah.
But my overriding thought was that whoever won it, the psychological advantage and disadvantage was going to be colossal. So if you won, you were going to like, we can win the league. We can do the double. And we didn't. So Chelsea are feeling like that. And yeah. We look like somebody like we just managed to beat Crystal Palace last night, and we did look for about, you know, outside of Eriksen's goal, like a group of people who'd got post-traumatic stress disorders.
Yeah, it can have a knock-on effect because, you know, there was a lot of talk afterwards. I mean, you're very much on the non-genus side of the fence here in terms of how you viewed that game, and you know, ultimately there's no point having a lot of the ball if you're letting in four goals. But is it... Does it feel like this season is the big chance to win the title, I guess? I mean, Chelsea are still favourites, I think. But because of what's coming up on the horizon, playing at Wembley next season, a ground which doesn't really seem to suit Tottenham.
That's an understatement. Yeah. I mean, the league is on because it's mathematically on, which sounds cold and passionless. But the problem we have is we simply don't have the depth of talent in the squad. So once you take away, you know, we get an injury or we get a player who doesn't have a good game, you know, we're staring at some really nondescript players. And, of course, the living legend that is Moussa Sissoko, who played his best game for Spurs against Crystal Palace as he went into time-wasting mode for the last sort of 7 minutes of extra time that were given due to an injury and pretended to be a corner flag with his foot on top of the ball. But, you know, this squad is too thin to be a great squad. And that's, I keep using this phrase, despite ourselves. So, you know, the league is still on. What was the other thing you mentioned? Sorry.
I think it was Wembley, wasn't it? Because that's something that you're going to have to contend with next season when you play every game there.
Wembley is possibly one of the most utterly stupid decisions a football club has made since, I don't know, somebody at Leeds said, hey, guys, I've just run a load of checkbooks in the drawer here.
Where should you have gone?
Where we should have gone was somewhere to consolidate the business, okay? Because, you know, in real businesses, you have change management is a big thing, because you can be doing something really well or whatever, but you change and it can hurt you. So the idea that you go into a period of, say, uncertainty, you need to make sure you cushion the blow. So the idea that you play at what is a soulless stadium, but yeah. More importantly, the analogy I've made with Wembley is that of the Grand National. Now, if anybody listening knows anything about horses, the Grand National can only run once a year, because if it was running twice a month, like your team playing at home twice a month, not including cup and domestic and foreign games, if you were running the Grand National twice a month, your stable yard would be empty and there'd be a big pile of dead horses. you simply cannot do it. And for all of the, you know, the hoo-ha, yeah, we've got a lot of, and you have, in fact, every team has in the Premier League, a lot of fans that sort of puff their chest out, go, oh, yes, we're playing at Wembley. You know, it's like saying you ate at, you know, so-and-so's restaurant or whatever. But the reality is, That's a one-off occasion. That's a grueling war of attrition venue.
Yeah.
And you need lots of stuff in your locker as a football team in order to be successful at a venue like that. So to play there twice a month is nuts.
Well, it's also, I think one of the other things as well is that if we accept on some level that fans play a part in how a team performs, and creating an atmosphere, making perhaps a football ground intimidating, as some can do. It's not really a Premier League thing, but, you know, there are grounds which are nice and small and compact. They make a lot of noise, and it does have an effect on the atmosphere. And Wembley's an absolute fucking shithole for that.
It really is. I mean, now, Wembley compensates for being a toilet, a blocked toilet, by letting lots of people in. So in theory, once you get the corporates out of the way, you've got 32,000 of your own lot jumping up and down, screaming and shouting.
But you've also got 28,000 of the other lot. That's how
Correct.
They fill it.
So that, but the more importantly, you've got the fucking air above your head. The sound goes up. I'm not an acoustics expert, but trust me, that's what happens to it. Mm. The sound dissipates and goes up. And the problem you have is that you're getting this group of people that's smaller than your home stadium trying to compensate against these two enormous factors. And the pitch is bigger. I think it's 400 square meters bigger or something bizarre like that. I can't really remember the exact money there, but it just doesn't fit. So what I would have done was I got to the point where I now say I'd happily go anywhere else, you know. But there was a big thing amongst our support base, especially the season ticket holders. Oh, we've got to be in London. They even came out with this crackpot theory, this fear of the dark thing. If we played outside of London, we might not come back.
What, did they just leave the stadium that they're renovating, yeah, just leave it there and go, oh, it's nice out here in the countryside, I think we'll stay in, like, deep, dark Devon?
Yeah. It's like, look, come on, guys. I know, you know, this North London is arse thing, but look at these cream teas. we don't get anything like that in Haringey. But it was really pushed through by the Supporters Trust, who are, try and put this nicely, a shower of wankers. they really championed this move. And unfortunately, they can... You know, a lot of supporters, they go, yeah, you've got a name involved in your thing. Yeah, go, that's a good idea. And they're just dummies. Mm. And we're now faced with this, I think it's going to be an absolute disaster. Milton Keynes was one lot that we spoke to. And the hysterics surrounding that was just embarrassing. I actually went to Milton Keynes. I had to do some business with somebody there. And I bumped into, kind of by accident, a guy who worked at the club. And I had a look around the stadium. And as luck would have it, I actually stayed at the Hilton, which is built round the actual stadium.
Whoa, living the dream, the Hilton and Milton Keynes.
Well, it was a combination of like, you know, being trapped in an episode of Alan Partridge, to put it mildly. But what was really crazy is you go into the hotel and you get your card and they say, enjoy your stay, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you then go to your fucking room and it dawns on you that there's like the two lifts, like there are in every hotel.
Mm.
But you have to walk around the pitch to get to your room. It took me like 25 minutes to come down for fucking breakfast.
Well,
you go, oh, I'm in room 304. So you think, oh, it's the third floor. It's probably the fourth door down on the right or whatever it is. Yeah. But you're actually behind the fucking goal.
Yeah.
But Milton Keynes itself, the stadium, is purpose-built. It is, as far as these things go, lovely. And it would have been a proper little fortress. Unlike Wembley, you can actually get to it.
Yeah.
Unlike Wembley, there are an array of shops and chains and bars and eateries across the way, so you could actually enjoy yourself. And unlike Wembley, it's actually a purpose-built football stadium, opposed to like a massive corporate thing to like just squeeze in 90,000 people and charge them all tenners for hot dogs.
Yeah, well, look, it's going to be a challenge. It's definitely going to be a challenge, because I even remember when Arsenal went there to play Champions League games.
What I was going to say. You guys did terribly there.
Yeah, it was bad. And look, you can see, I don't think we had any choice at the time because of, I think it was UEFA restrictions about advertising or whatever that, I can't remember, capacity or some thing or other.
I just to bore everybody further, I've actually looked into this. I looked up the UEFA, the docs, which are a fascinating read for anybody who's got insomnia. The capacity thing is a myth. You have to only have, it's over something like 4,000 seats. And it is more to do with the merchandising of the Champions League and the Europa Cup branding.
Right.
Yeah, and the amount of sort of square footage there is for that.
Yeah.
The press allocation, all the sort of usual nuts and bolts, they're very low requirements, comparatively speaking. But because there were a couple of teams, there was one team that Chelsea played, and they had like 4,012 capacity or something.
Just about got in.
Yeah, but the clubs, you see, they need to milk it.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, maybe that's what Arsenal did, was that they thought, okay, we can get 75,000-80,000 people into Wembley. I think they did sell some cheap tickets, but from a performance point of view, when you go from Highbury, which is home, which is, you know, a compact, old-fashioned stadium, to that Wembley, which was the old Wembley at the time, I mean, you just don't feel at home there, and that's obviously something that you guys are going to have to contend with when you go there next season. But, you know, that's something we can all enjoy from August onwards.
Listen, anybody out there who hates Spurs, they're going to have a lot of free fun come their way next season. I mean, we've gone till the end of this month. Levy, the Spurs CEO, sent out an email to everybody, the membership season ticket guys, 2-3 days ago, saying that the decision would be made at the end of the month. He's still scrambling. The bulldozers are booked to come in after the Man United game. But I'm really struggling to see. It just doesn't make any sense. There's no logical reason why this is going to work for us. If you guys were a better team when you were there and you couldn't cope with it. We sold seats for £5 and £10 at our last Champions League game that we lost, and people were leaving in droves on the hour mark.
Mm. Someone was telling me, I don't know if this is in any way an exclusive to you, but someone was telling me that the box holders at Tottenham have already been sent letters to say Wembley is on, buy your box at Wembley. So
The problem with the communication, as ever, and it's probably the same at Arsenal, same at everybody else, is that the high rollers get the information filtered down to them because there's a need to bring the money in. So the stuff they put in the press for the ordinary rabble to pick up on always comes out later.
Mm. So look, it is going to be a season when you guys finish ahead of Arsenal. I'm a bit like you in the sense that that's not one of the things that defines a season for me, even if over the years have been some very funny moments from an Arsenal point of view, not from your point of view. Of course, I'm thinking of last season in particular was tremendous. It was so good. It made Arsenal fans forget how shit we'd been and what a chance we'd blown to win the title. So that's what it was. How are you feeling about Sunday? I know it is the old cliche about form going out the window when it comes to the derby, but it is really true, I think, in this game in particular.
If we play like we did against Chelsea, I'll be going out the window. Mm. It's I thought we were going to beat Chelsea, which is a fascinating insight. I would have thought, based upon, you know, had we beaten them, that we could beat you too. I'm now completely uncertain, and I wouldn't be surprised if you beat us at all. I know I should be more upbeat. We're second, we're above you, but it isn't. It doesn't define anything. The results define stuff in football to me. So if we beat you twice a season or once a season, or we draw, that tells me more about where we're going. And I've got this obsession of looking towards the trophy cabinet, and we've got one pot in there after 17 years.
Yeah.
Which probably reflects our, I think, close to zero net spend within the same period.
Mm. Well, it's going to be a very interesting one, because for you guys, it's a game that you've got to get, you've got to win, I think, really, to keep pace with Chelsea. If we take any points off you at all, it's going to make Chelsea's job a little bit easier.
Well, I hope you don't do anything stupid, like you know, throw a ball really hard at one of your players' shoulders.
Yeah, well, look, that was an outrageous piece of violent conduct there. That
somebody put on the blog. Did he not realise he would be spotted? And I said, well, you know, sometimes you can forget you're stood in front of, like, you know, a few tens of thousands of people and, you know, 21 high definition cameras.
Yeah,
that could just go out of your head.
I don't quite understand why all the focus is on Sanchez and is rolling around. I mean, it was a bit, Rivaldo-esque, but, you know, a little bit of shithousing is no big issue. But they completely overlooked the fact that your man threw the ball straight at his head. You're not allowed to do that, right?
No, you're not. I mean, it was clearly, I mean, I know it's a piece of UPVC or whatever they made, neoprene or whatever, and there was a limit to the damage he could do. But it was thrown violently at the guy, so that was an offence before the ball landed on anything or anyone. And then I've watched the slow-mo thing, which is on Twitter. I'm sure we've all seen it. And it bounces off his thing. And he then goes, oh, yeah. Oh, that's it, the face. Yeah. And then collapses. So they were both guilty of being very daft.
Yes.
Which I believe is a punishable offence.
Well, look, being daft has been something we've been masters of this season. So I'm hopeful that we will try and rein in those tendencies a little bit at White Hart Lane on Sunday. But we'll leave it there. Go on. Have you got one more thing to say?
No. I was just going to say, I just hope it doesn't go so badly. We have to watch Giroud doing that sort of jiggity-jiggity celebration, click his heels dance thing.
The Morecambe and Wise.
Yeah. If there was a DVD of that, you know, that would be good.
Well, look, you guys know a lot about making DVDs.
That's what I mentioned.
Harry Hotspur, thank you very much.
Cheers.
Thank you very much indeed to Harry Hotspur, wishing him no luck whatsoever for Sunday. But if you want to check his stuff out, it is theboyhotspur.com, theboyhotspur.com. So that's it. All we've got to do is look ahead very quickly to the game on Sunday. It's Thursday. We haven't had a press conference yet. We don't know what the team news is. Hopefully, nothing too serious. There was that issue with Lauren Koscielny, of course, where he tweaked his knee late in the game, came back on, so you're hoping that it was not too serious. I wouldn't like to be going there without Lauren Koscielny. I would imagine his fitness will play a big part in whether or not we stick with three at the back. If he's fit, then I think we probably will. If not, who do you bring in? We don't really have three. Mustafi, I think, would still be injured. Per Mertesacker, still a bit sidelined, and then you've only got Gabriel and Rob Holding, so it's very difficult to know what's going to happen there, but it's just one of those weird games where, as I said earlier in the show, form does go out the window, and considering our form has been in the toilet, that's maybe not necessarily a bad thing, but maybe we can just pick up on where we left off against Manchester City and not so much against Leicester City in midweek, because I think the team was tweaked a little bit there to keep some players fresh, keep some legs fresh ahead of the game on Sunday. It's a game that could put an end to Tottenham's title hopes. It is, you know, if we take even just points off them, take a couple of points off them and Chelsea win, it's going to make it very, very difficult for them. But obviously, if we want to get into the top four, then we've got to win the game, and it would be good. It would be nice to go there the last game at that White Hart Lane and come away with a win, as we did in 2004 when we came away having won the title. Yeah, I just don't know what to think about it, other than it's a game that I find difficult to enjoy until it's over and we've won. And anything between the first whistle and the final whistle when we haven't is a bit of an endurance. So, look, we'll wait and see. Hopefully, Arsenal can get us a result. I think they owe us after what they've put us through the last few weeks. And if they can dig in like they did against Manchester City, I don't think it's beyond them, but it is going to be very difficult. Obviously, Tottenham at home, and they're full of confidence, playing pretty well, and they've got a lot to play for. So maybe that could be a good thing. Maybe when they've got a lot to play for, they tend to, what's that word, you know, spurs it up a bit. So let's hope they do that. That would be good. James and I will be here on Monday to discuss the game with you and everything that happens at White Hart Lane. It won't be on Monday morning, though. So those of you expecting an Arscast Extra on Monday morning, sorry, but James is away until Monday afternoon. We will be recording late on Monday afternoon, and we'll have the podcast for you very early Monday evening. So probably, I would say, around 6 o'clock, we'll have the Arscast Extra for you on Monday. So sit tight until then. Hopefully, we've got lots of good stuff to talk about. Have yourselves a great weekend in the meantime, and come on, Arsenal. Catch you on the next one. Cheers. Bye-bye. Well, I was a very, very young man when all this went down, and of course the wisdom you have as an older person doesn't necessarily translate itself to the youth, of course, and they think they know everything, and I was one of those. I thought I had the world at my feet, but of course the world is bigger than anyone's feet. Even Kanu's feet, they're very, very, very big feet, but no, he doesn't have the world at them, no. And I remember him saying to me, look, you and I, we have to come to an agreement about all this. And I said, oh, God, why won't you just leave me alone? I want to do my own thing. We had a terrible, terrible row one night. Terrible row. I remember going around to my friend's house, Giles. Giles was his name. He was an ace tennis player and also a magician, an absolute magician on the ZX Spectrum. He could complete Jet Set Willy within 21 minutes, and we were in awe of him. But it was a traumatic time for me, a very difficult time, and I suffered a lot. I suffered a lot. And one night we were there playing Manic Miner. And he said, look, what's wrong with you? What is the problem that you have? Because it's encapsulating, it's encompassing your whole life. It's going to take you down. And I said to him, look, my old man, he said, what did he say? He said, I said, look, it's hard for me to tell you, but my old man, he said, be a Tottenham fan. He was aghast. He couldn't believe it. Of all the things that he might have said to me down the years, he paused for the longest time. What did you say to him? He said. What could I say? I said. He wouldn't accept that, though. What did you say? He said. The only thing I could say, I said. I said, fuck off, bollocks. You're a cunt. Did your relationship ever recover from that? He said. No, I said. He died not long after. And
tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
To be honest, I was quite glad. He was an awful